get started.
Just get started. Okay. So the topic of this discussion, remember, this is a discussion group, and my job is really to introduce the topic so that maybe 20, 25 minutes later, we can all get into a discussion for about an hour or so on it. And I'm also going to – we'll be talking about alienation, and that's kind of the topic – but also the sort of paradoxes that occur in thinking about it, since it's also a psychological model, obviously one rooted in very material conditions of our expropriation, but still one that alleges to cause various physical emotional effects. And so it's an interesting topic when we think of our relationship to our own minds and bodies and so on. But anyway, but I'm going to begin by... First of all, and before I do, I just want to say I'd like at the end, like once after the hour-long discussion, I would like about 5 minutes at the end, if possible, whoever's keeping clock, and I'll try my best to do that too, because I've listed what I could think of. It's just me thinking them up, 13 ways in which alienation could express itself. And so it would be interesting after the discussion whether we've hit on those 13 or maybe there's some you've thought of that I didn't think of, that kind of thing. So I'd like at the end the opportunity to just sort of do that at the end. But I thought it would be better to do it at the end. It would be more fun than the sort of less prompting of it. I don't know why. Okay, so let's get going. So I'm going to begin with a quote. It's from Marx from 1844. The less you eat, drink, buy books, go to the theater or to balls or to the pub, and the less you think, love, theorize, sing, paint, fence, etc., the more you will be able to save, and the greater will become your treasure, which neither moth nor rust will corrupt, your capital. The less you are, the less you express your life, the more you have, the greater is your alienated life, and the greater is the saving of your alienated being. So initially, of course, it's possible since he's saying your capital, he could be addressing the capitalist. But actually, I think what he's addressing, at least how I'm understanding it, he actually is addressing workers in the sense that very often we have this ideology, you'll hear it more mostly from right-wing people, about how any of us could become capitalists, you know, if we just saved our money, if we lived more thriftly, you know, we're responsible for our poverty and we're lazy and all the rest of it. And so, you know, if we just like the penny in Mary Poppins, right? If you just invest that penny, it'll acquire interest, et cetera, et cetera. Before you know it, you'll own the bank, kind of thing. So in a way, he's addressing that idea that if you just kind of you know, go without all these great things, basically, if you go without living in a way, at least you'll end up with capital. So that's like the first quote I wanted to bring up. But it's sort of one way in which he's discussing alienation. I want to bring up just a few more quotes before I get into the sort of more the meat of the whole discussion. Here's another one. This one is from 23 years later in 1867, I believe, in Capital, where he says money is the alienated essence of man's life and man's labor and life. And this alien essence dominates him as he worships it. So here he is, of course, he hasn't changed his tune about either alienation or about money, even 23 years later. And also, one last quote, again, it's from Marx. I could have picked someone else, I guess, but just sort of how it goes. This is a later book. It's actually called Selected Writings in Sociology and Social Philosophy, but it's actually a compilation of writings of Marx, and it's also alleged to have been written in 1844. Where he's writing here about the alienation of man, of course, he means humanity, as the fundamental evil of society. And, you know, note actually that he's using the word evil, which of course is a moral term, denoting a sense that, you know, that alienation may in fact be one of the traits that makes capitalism, you know, particularly bad, let's just say, you know, in the sense of worthy of critique. And as he isn't a Hegelian anymore, he, you know, obviously worthy also of elimination, not just of critique, but worthy of replacing it with something better. So alienation seems a very important part of at least Marx's outlook, at least. And then we can discuss later how much we find it's relevant to us and so on and so forth. But basically, alienation seems to derive, according to Marx, from basically workers only owning their labor power and not owning the product. And that, of course, is owned by the capitalist. And this is an arrangement and a social relation that is legally enforced. So now I would like to go over four. I hope you can see that. Yeah, I think you can see that. Okay. It's funny, everything I see is literally like it's so small on my screen. It's like I can't even read what's on there, but I'm just assuming you can see that. It looks like a
It
little.
is a bit small, Danny, actually.
Okay.
It is a bit small.
I'm not sure I can affect the typing. In some, it's a PDF, but in some of the, some of the extracts that I'll have later would be bigger. I did my best to make them as big as possible, but you're right. It does look a bit small there. Anyway, so here he is listing, Marx is listing four main aspects of the workers' alienation under capitalism. And one of them, I'm going to go over them pretty quickly here. One of them is alienation from the product. The object is produced, and the object that is produced is owned and controlled by the capitalist, not the worker. Another type of alienation that he mentions is alienation from the actual act of producing, of production. The labor process is external to the worker, who is coerced rather than fulfilling their species, what he's going to call their species essence or being. But we're also alienated from the species essence or being itself as well, which means really that the worker is estranged from their own human nature, which Marx defines really as a kind of creative and purposeful production. You know, we want to engage in activity that is useful, that helps out our community, that is a normal expression of the human animal, that after all existed for the longest period of time. You know, expressing their essence, working together, I guess, in a tribal context for the longest time as free people, but eventually property society came along and robbed humans of that. And so presumably the subjected class, I would assume, of any property society, you know, whether slave, peasant, or worker, could equally be considered alienated. Okay, now I wanted to also mention, because I think it's important historically to mention, that the concept of alienation, also called estrangement, well, actually, before we get to that, let me just throw out some questions. It seems to me that certain questions are already kind of implied somewhat, and they're the questions that I hoped we could maybe focus on. But obviously, you know, you're all free to bring up whatever you want, and or not to contribute if you're more comfortable not contributing. But certain questions came to mind in any way, such as how does alienation express itself? How do we, I mean, literally feel it? You know, are we aware of it? Does everyone experience it? Maybe even does a socialist understanding and consciousness facilitate its misery, right? In the sense of the more we know about what we don't have or what we can't be, the more miserable we would be as a result. And do all workers basically experience a feeling of alienation, even if unaware of it or unable to articulate it? And that poses one of the paradoxes about alienation that I thought we could kind of talk about, and which I thought made it an interesting topic. And I wanted to point out also that Hegel was the origin of the concept of alienation and estrangement. I don't know, maybe some of you know if it existed before, but Hegel is one of the, is certainly the one that Marx is bouncing off and making use of. But of course, Marx turned Hegel on his head. And obviously, that doesn't mean that he physically turned Hegel the body on his head, but just his ideas, his interpretation of alienation. Now, according to Hegel, and again, I'm not an expert on Hegel, but from the little I understand of Hegel, which I think may be sufficient here, is that for Hegel, there is basically this concept of the spirit or the mind, which I think are viewed equivalently. And basically all any pretty much all reality may be reduced to the spirit or the mind. And he was particularly interested in the forward movement of all of that, including the creations of humans, the forward movement of history, the human, the forward moving movement of laws, and so on. And I think actually not as many people assume. It doesn't mean that Hegel believed that there's actually a mind in space in the sense of, like a spirit or a god or something like that. Nor is he implying that consciousness can exist outside of a brain. But what he is doing is he has this theory, which of course is called idealist for that reason, that all of reality is a kind of expression of a kind of a reason. He was, after all, a product of the Enlightenment. And so reason is a, is obviously a centerpiece of the Enlightenment. And so all reality, including the whole movement of humans, is towards this expression of a more mature, evolved kind of reason, basically. And so in the beginning, the spirit doesn't recognize itself in the world, but it does. And so it's estranged or alienated from the world around it, including from itself. But the solution is for alienation to overcome that through thinking. So merely thinking about the world and understanding the world is what basically would reduce or eliminate alienation and estrangement. And so in some ways, it's not the most crackpotty idea, really, because, there are many neuroscientists and historians, people who study the histories of consciousness will very often describe, the more primitive state that the mind was in, probably having to speculate as we were closer to other creatures, other primates, a few million years ago, and how we must have changed, how our thinking must have changed over time to the point where we actually can develop theories that we can now, like the Big Bang or evolution, where more and more the universe is sort of contained within our thinking, not literally, but in the sense that we now understand it better. And so we have become, in a way, the universe thinking about itself in a certain way. So anyway, so in some ways he was sort of an early thinker about that. But Marx, at least, was able to place the theory of alienation into more of a social context, in the context of a society of owners and non-owners. I'm just looking at some notes that I wrote here, trying to see if they're relevant or if I want to go off springboard off them. I haven't looked at them much so far. So now I'm getting distracted looking at some notes that I wrote. I think I can just babble on probably in the way it is. But anyway, so as I was thinking about this and as I was sort of developing ideas for the presentation, I was, so I can basically, I'm going to stop there. So basically, no, wait a minute. Sorry, I got that wrong. I think there. Okay. So alienation, therefore, seems to be a fundamental aspect of capitalism, kind of like built in to capitalism, but it's also a feeling. So just to use my own words, we could define that feeling perhaps as a feeling of unhappiness or a feeling of meaninglessness, powerlessness, isolation. And then to use Marx's words, he actually is describing it as mortified in body and mind. So he's clearly implying that it's something that we can experience in our own bodies. Now, in writing about that, I do have a tendency to kind of free associate with other ideas and how they may or may not connect. And so I was thinking about an early theorist of just looking at suffering and the mind, but not one that looks at suffering or the mind in a social context, which is. But that was perhaps an early materialist thinker about human suffering. And so I came up with the idea of the Buddha. And so so it may seem a bit crackpotty at first, but there's a reason I'm bringing him up. Because he was, as far as I can tell, a sort of one of the earliest materialist thinkers who conceptualized human suffering in terms of something very existential, namely the bodies that we come with. In terms of the kind of crazy thinking we have, the impulses that affect us, and also the fact that we're bodies that lose, that lose things around us, including other people, that bodies that age, that get ill, that die eventually. These are all built-in existential realities that we face in our lives. But of course, he wasn't in any way discussing the context, which would have been feudalism, and then I believe there was slavery also at that time in India. And Marx, of course, is also talking about suffering, but this time one that is very specific to property society, and that is, you know, alienation, basically the result of our expropriation from the means of production. But the idea of the Buddha, when I was thinking about it, to me, it's more an archetype for pretty much any modern thinking as well, such as psychiatry, you know, psychotherapy, neuroscience, any model that really tries to understand our emotional life in terms of something that's still very much within the body. So it could be thoughts, right? Like cognitive theory has a lot to do with the thoughts that generate emotional experiences. Or it could be about even physiological characteristics, you know, the amygdala, which is the seat of emotion, kind of misfiring in some way, or chemicals in the body that tilt us into a more depressed or anxious state or whatever. However, the theory that Marx has, which is to add a social dimension to this way of thinking about ourselves that maybe started with the Buddha but evolves eventually in the last 100 years into modern psychology, Marx is adding a social dimension to it, which I think today, from all the readings I'm doing, certainly are highly considered. And pretty much any neuroscientist, psychologist, psychiatrist worth their salt understands that what we feel is very much in response to the world around us. And often we feel things that are in, you know, literally in response to things that are going on in our stresses, you know, that go on in our lives. So a culture is very much something that's understood as an underpinning of our emotions, and I think vice versa too, that we our thoughts and emotions can also feed back into our culture and change it, which of course is what we're hoping in another way. So anyway, so that's why I brought up that. So I brought it up also because sometimes bringing up some other idea can kind of, I don't know, allow the conversation to be more complex in some ways. And sometimes we only understand an idea better in relationship to another one, which is actually something that a psychologist called George Kelly 100 years ago was writing about. We can only really understand things in relationship to a second thing and so on. So that is, in a nutshell, the I think we're kind of almost at the time when I could sort of start zipping up and allowing us to have a conversation. So what I wanted to do here, I threw out therefore a few questions in summary that are similar to the questions I brought up earlier. And they are questions we could try to perhaps touch upon in our discussion. Not, of course, that you have to. I mean, you know, feel free to discuss whatever you want, but I'm hoping it stays, you know, on the topic of alienation. How do we experience alienation, maybe even on a personal level, right? Because I actually do think about it a lot. I mean, almost every day I think about how the difficulties that I have in my life just emotionally connect to the idea of alienation. So I actually think of it, you know, even if there's personal things or things that may not appear at first so easy to root in capitalism, I think ultimately it's very hard to separate anything that we're thinking or feeling from our context. So I think of alienation as actually a very important part of why I'm opposed to capitalism. So how do we experience alienation? It could be a possible question. What can we do about it? Because, you know, while we're living with it, I don't think any of us would believe that if we suffer from anything else, like depression, for example, that we wouldn't say, well, we have to wait for a better society. We would say there are things you can do now, right? You can have psychotherapy. You could go for a walk in the park. You could engage in creative activities. You could enjoy more support from other human beings. All those things we know can make a huge difference in our emotional lives. And yet we're also living with this paradox because at the same time, we also believe that there are very real, very true effects to living in a society where we're expropriated from the means of production and all the very crazy culture that emanates from that reality. So that's just, so those are all questions that I sort of threw out for possible consideration. But obviously any other observations or experiences relating to alienation that come to mind are obviously welcome. And so now I just wanted to therefore invite you to the discussion.